Hi, this is Charles on democraticfundamentalism.org. It's Wednesday, November 20th, 2002, about 4 a.m. Pacific Coast Time. Separation of church and state. Well, that seems to be a favorite topic of mine these days. I figure we're in a separation of church and state target-rich environment these days. One of the best examples is the Alabama judge who decided to give the state a gift of a 2.5-ton copy of the Ten Commandments. That's right. Without asking if anyone wanted it. Plenty more to that story, of course. It's a discussion of how people often believe the ends justify the means. Speaking of which, the Department of Ashcroft is pleased at the victory for securing far-reaching privileges in terms of tracking people in the United States. There's a constitutional basis for concern, and it isn't even just about the potential for breaching civil rights. And then we have to be concerned about the Total Information Awareness System, Project Lookout, and a thing they call Homeland Security that will provide little benefit for citizens for years, but most definitely grants information gathering privileges very quickly. The bottom line, like I constantly say, any tool put in the hands of a person with good intent can be a good thing. The same tool in the hands of the wrong people can be a disaster, like, well, the U.S. military or Fox News. We'll have some entertainment news for you. And you know, I watched the Larry King Live program on CNN tonight, and I was eagerly awaiting the appearance of Al and Tipper Gore and to see what Al has to say about things these days, and I'll be doggone if Larry didn't steal the show. It's his show. As he's allowed. You'll be surprised what he said that struck a chord with me. With that, let's get into the news. Oh, as always, first, let me welcome those of you linking in from other websites or through the email on this site. DemocraticFundamentalism.org gives links to complete news stories on other websites in order to give you full access to the full information you'll probably want to read. Just go to DemocraticFundamentalism.org and the News in Review, and select the text version of today's report, and you'll find all the links to the stories that will give you more background on what I'm going to talk about. And of course, as I always say, you don't have to take my word for anything. I don't have to make this stuff up. It's the sad part, you know. I always regret that. Well, first of all, I have to say how disappointed I was last night. It's a beautiful night tonight, but last night it was one of the few times you'll ever catch me complaining about it raining in the rainforest. But I wasn't able to see the Leonid shower. But I'll definitely get to see some of the view of the eclipse tonight. I was just thinking of how I don't know much about astronomy, but there's something about the Big Dipper. It's a powerful thing. Maybe one day I'll explain that to you. Nonetheless, back on planet Earth, I heard someone say that unraveling the divisions caused by fundamentalist religious groups and reconciling them with upholding the separation of church and state would be a complex problem, and you know what it is. But the answer is not in persuading anyone about anything. The answer is in education, giving people objective information and empowering them to know the difference between fact and those clever, deceptive explanations. Dateline, Alabama. This story coming from the Associated Press and CNN. A Ten Commandments monument in the rotunda of Alabama's judicial building violates the Constitution's ban on government promotion of a religion, a federal judge ruled on Monday. U.S. District Judge Myron Thompson gave Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore, who had the 5,300-pound granite monument installed in the state building, 30 days to remove it. Moore testified during the trial that the commandments are the moral foundation of American law. He said the monument acknowledges God, but does not force anyone to follow his conservative Christian religious beliefs. A lawsuit seeking removal of the monument argued that it promoted the judge's faith in violation of the Constitution's ban on government establishment of religion. This is a question of whether the politically powerful can impose their views on others, Southern Poverty Law Center attorney Daniel Lipow argued during the trial before Thompson. Moore testified he decided to locate a monument to the Ten Commandments in the building shortly after he was elected Chief Justice in November 2000. Part of the reason I chuckle about that is because the truth is, you know, a site like that is something I'd actually like to see, but just maybe not there. This story is a combination of a number of unfortunate ironies and worrisome attributes. To begin with, this judge is supposed to have the ability to make unbiased, objective decisions, and that includes on matters of separation of church and state. But there's more to cause concern. This judge had this statue put in the courthouse in the middle of the night. He didn't ask anyone if he could put it there. He knew they'd have a problem with it. So he didn't ask. He just went ahead and did it. He just decided to take it upon himself to impose the placement of the statue, even though he knew he would have to sneak it in. Well, that sounds like a judge, huh? And I suppose you know this judge wants to implement his own religious beliefs into the rulings he will make. I mean, what else can you assume? He apparently believes it's more important than upholding the Constitution. The old ends justify the means game. You know, it's funny, I have to believe that if I placed a 2.5-ton sculpture on state or federal property, I would probably be arrested for malicious mischief or something. This guy actually is challenging the court ruling telling him to remove it from a place he had no authority to place it in the first place. This is just one example of the kind of agenda of Heritage.org and Jerry Falwell expressing its influence over the neoconservative administration and followers of George Bush. And more of the same should be expected as Bush judicial and nominees take their places in the courts of this country. Something tells me I'm starting to sound a little sarcastic. I was going for cynical. You know, when you research fundamentalism, go up on the web. Just type in, to Google or Yahoo and type in fundamentalism. Any kind of religion, when you get into fundamentalism, you rarely see a report of positive effects for a society because of its imposition. Those who disagree or refuse to conform are persecuted. In Iran, they just executed a man for questioning whether the clerics of the church had the right to govern the country. And that's what fundamentalism usually devolves to. What any fanaticism devolves to. Anyone questioning those in power will be subjected to monitoring, if only to find a reason to prosecute and remove those who would stand up to the authority. It's a pattern of history that has occurred time and time again for centuries. I'm about to reach one of those places where I want to say, don't get me started, but I'm already started, so I might as well continue on. Of course, it doesn't all just stop there. This taking sides and applying inappropriate influences and deceiving people into thinking it's an objective occurrence. What am I really babbling about? Well, I'm going to tell you. This, too, comes from CNN Wolf Blitzer Reports, Monday, November 18th, and it comes from the book by Bob Woodward, called Bush at War, a very revealing book in many ways. And this is Wolf Blitzer talking. He says, Woodward writes of a president frustrated over the so-called hand-wringings of his top aides over war strategy. The president, he says, was preoccupied by media coverage of the war and public perceptions. Woodward writes that Roger Ailes, who had been a media advisor to the first President Bush and is now chairman of the Fox News Channel, sent a confidential message to the White House. Woodward writes, his back-channel message, the American public would tolerate waiting and would be patient, but only as long as they were convinced that Bush was using the harshest measures possible. Woodward says Ailes' message had to be confidential because in his position as head of a news network, he was not supposed to be giving political advice. Ailes has issued this statement, Bob Woodward's characterization of my memo is incorrect. In the days following 9/11, our country came together in nonpartisan support of the president. During that time, I wrote a personal note to a White House staff member as a concerned American, expressing my outrage about the attacks on our country. I did not give up my American citizenship to take on this job. Now, you know, I always say I don't expect anyone to agree with me about everything, and I technically have no problem with a network executive offering advice to anyone they feel like. I mean, that really is their right. What I do dislike, however, is what this communication really points to. And it isn't about access to the president or press. It has to do with someone advising the president on the kind of image that it needs to be presented in order to maintain public confidence, as opposed to encouraging the president to be honest and forthright. To me, it shows up like a how-to of maintaining a facade. Another example of ends justify the means. And that the government is telling us things to mislead us into following their lead in order to implement their agenda. It's simple deception. That's what concerns me. It's why on the front of this site I encourage you to read the article, How to Generate Public Acceptance of War by Hermann Göring. That's Hitler's number two man. It's all about the same thing, manipulating a citizenry into accepting the inevitable, or the apparently inevitable. It's why 75% of Americans believe war with Iraq is unavoidable. You've been trained to believe that. And if you don't believe it, you'll seem out of place in the minority, won't you? I mean, really, won't you? That's the whole point. When you feel outnumbered, you surrender. Fox News. At least now we know where they really stand. You know, I've kidded around so much about running for vice president so that Al Gore could be president. Well, I was just worried just a little bit about what he'll say he believes in when he goes on TV and gives speeches. As if, you know, I have any right to judge what he says anyway. And, you know, it worries me, though, because I wouldn't want to have to find out that I disagree with him about many things, and I'm happy to say, so far, he hasn't disappointed me with his opinions and philosophies. In this case, he was on Larry King Live. Well, Larry King always finds a way to capture my interest. Tonight, it was two things. One was an interview with Al and Tipper Gore. In this case, they were talking about the Total Information Awareness System and the dangers to the right to privacy, war in Iraq, you know, stuff like that. Again, this from the transcript from CNN's Larry King Live. This was on November 19th, and it begins with a question from a caller. Question, what do you think about the Homeland Security becoming a cabinet position? Al Gore said, oh, I don't think it's a bad thing to make it a cabinet position. I think that moving the boxes around on the organizational chart has limited benefit. But I think in this case, it can bring some limited but real benefits. I would like to add one other thing on this. While making it a cabinet department is a good thing, and many other features of that bill are excellent, I am growing more and more concerned about the violations of individual privacy that are contained in the current draft. Larry King asks, like what? Now says, well, they have a plan that this guy, Admiral Poindexter, has been put in charge of in the Pentagon. You know, he was one of the ones in the Iran-Contra business. It's called Total Information Awareness. And if carried out, this plan would empower the government to collect information on every citizen of the United States and keep it there. They could use it or not use it, presumably because they were simply focused on countering the terrorism threat. But fear can cause people to make mistakes, and fear can cause great nations to make mistakes. And just yesterday, the news came out this morning of this secret court dramatically changing the standards for wiretapping American citizens and giving Justice Department the right to go in and use a much weaker standard to listen in on our conversations. What in the world are they doing here? Larry King said, well, couldn't they say, well, I don't want to speak for them. The fear is warranted? And Al Gore said, well, the fear is warranted, but the remedy needs to be matched to the threat. And see, what is the objective of terrorists is to destroy our way of life. We should not give them part of their victory by destroying important parts of our own way of life. Al went on to say, and a right to privacy is a part of every American's right. And this whole, well, you know, for many years, going back to George Orwell and before, there have been these warnings that the new technologies of communication and wiretapping and everything create the possibility of a Big Brother type state. And we've always pushed away that and said, no, we want nothing like that in the United States. We will cast our lot with free speech and openness and the rights of the individual. And now, step by step, we're actually getting into a situation where some of the things they're contemplating would take us big steps down the road to a Big Brother type approach. I think there ought to be a lot of resistance to this. Well, personally, the only thing I'd add to that, Al, is enough said. Well, actually, I have to point out that many of the stipulations and intents of the Constitution were put there to prevent the extremes of fanaticism and to prevent any one individual group from becoming so powerful and getting carried away. They were very wise about anticipating human nature to keep wealth from controlling the policies of the country. There's that phrase about how absolute power corrupts absolutely. There's a lot of wisdom in that phrase. Just something to remember when considering what's going on in this administration. All right, let's do some entertainment news, something a little bit more fun. You know, I have to tell you, still really enjoying the new Phil Collins album. It's called Testify. It's got some really great music, and I love the love songs and the radical stuff, too. The new George Harrison CD is out. Haven't picked it up yet, but I will soon. I've been waiting for that one. That CD, it's called Brainwashed. Somehow that title doesn't surprise me at all. Interesting story, though. It was an album he was working on when he died. Jeff Lynne stepped in afterward to produce and complete it. Lynne said he was concerned that he had made the cuts too slick for Harrison fans. Jeff Lynne was a good friend of Harrison's and a big talent in his own right. He was, of course, the leader of the Electric Light Orchestra and appeared with Harrison, Roy Orbison, and others as the Traveling Wilburys in the 80s. Had a hit called Handle Me With Care. Anyway, this is one album that's sure to be a treat. Speaking of new releases, Kevin Kline, one of the finest character actors in Hollywood today, and of course that's my opinion. He was in Grand Canyon and Life of House and Orange County and many, many others. Anyway, he's got a new movie that's being released on Friday called The Emperor's Club. They've got a website called emperorsclub.com. Just a coincidence, of course. Just have a feeling it's going to be a great movie. There's a quote from it that I just love. It's, how will history remember you? Kind of says it all, doesn't it? I'm going to hang that one on my wall. A couple of birthdays of some famous people. Dick Cavett, 66 years old. Alan Young, the man who played Dave in the program Mr. Ed. You know, the talking horse. A horse is a horse, of course. You know. Anyway, Alan Young, he's 83 today. That was a show I really loved when I was a kid. Jodie Foster, thought she was incredible in Contact. She's 40 years old today. There's this other guy I talk about from time to time. He turned 69 today. Found it out because Al Gore was late getting to the Larry King Live program tonight. So Larry brought on his two children and his wife, and he announced it was his birthday. So I guess, you know, happy birthday, Larry. What I thought was incredibly poignant and moving, though, has to do with something I believe in. I've been writing this book called For the Love of the World, and in it, one of the chapters is called Children, Creators of the Universe. This, too, coming from the transcript from Larry King Live. Here's what Larry said. He began talking about his children. He said, Chance and Cannon King were both born in Los Angeles. Chance is 3.5 years old, and Cannon is 2.5 years old. It may seem strange for someone my age to have children this young. I do have three older children who are grown up, and Sean, his wife, has a child as well who's 21 years old, and my other children are in their late 40s, early 40s, and mid-30s, and they're having these two boys now go to school, preschool, and trying to raise them to be good kids in a difficult world. King went on to say, we taped an interview earlier today with Bono. It's going to play on World AIDS Day on the 1st of December. It was an extraordinary hour, and I asked Bono if having children made any difference in his life? And he said, yeah, it made him more serious about the world. Made him think things a little differently. And Larry King said, these kids make me think things differently. I think my greatest hope on my 69th birthday was to be to see that they grow up in a safe, sane world without people harming people. With that, we'll call it a wrap. This is Charles, DemocraticFundamentalism.org. You take care.